All right. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. We are in Joshua chapter 7. Joshua 7 tonight. So a lot to talk about, a lot of practical applications for us from this chapter. So this comes right after the great victory at Jericho that y'all studied last week. So just a quick review. I think this is the fifth class, if I'm counting right, in Joshua. So chapter 1 is all about God encouraging Joshua for the task that is set before him. Moses had just died, and it had not been very long, maybe about a month, since he died on the mountain. And then God tells Joshua, you're the leader, you're the man, and be strong and courageous. So that's what he does. And so the people say, we will follow you as long as you are following the Lord, which was a good reply. Chapter 2, Joshua sends in the spies to Jericho, and you see the faith of Rahab in that chapter. And then chapters 3 and 4, very exciting chapters, where they cross over into the Promised Land. A lot of parallels from the Red Sea crossing to the crossing of the Jordan. Remember how they grabbed the stones as a memorial, and so they can tell their kids and their grandkids, this is what God has done, how He is the one that led us into the Promised Land that He promised Abraham over 400 years prior. And then chapter 5 is get ready to fight, and their preparation consisted of what? How did God kind of prepare them for the battle at Jericho? What did He tell them to do?
Get circumcised.
Get circumcised, right? Natural army command, right? Right before a big battle. Get circumcised. Basically, get your life right with the Lord. Get yourself spiritually ready. And that's what they did. And then they walked around Jericho for 7 days. And then the walls came tumbling down. So after that great victory, how would you think morale is at the Israelite camp?
Pretty high.
Yeah, we're doing really well. If we can beat Jericho and those thick walls and the people that live there, then surely we can do anything. So that's what we're going to look at in chapter 7. However, chapter 7 does not start very well, right? So the first word, but the sons of Israel acted unfaithfully in regard to the things under the ban. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, took some of the things under the ban. Therefore, the anger of the Lord burned against the sons of Israel. All right, so you have there in verse 1 is kind of the setup for the rest of the chapter. We were not aware of anything negative happening in chapter 6. So chapter 7 tells us that it's not gonna go well for Israel. What ban is he talking about there in verse 1? Remember the ban? What were they not allowed to do? Absolutely. So look at chapter 6, just verse kind of 18 and 19. And notice what God tells them, but as for you, only keep yourselves from the things under the ban, so that you do not covet them, and take some of them under the ban, and make the camp of Israel accursed, and bring trouble on it. But all the silver and the gold, articles of bronze, iron, are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. So it's as though God knew some of their hearts, right, and knew what they would desire. So God always gets the first, right? The first fruits belong to God. And so kind of the first victory, the first city, all the things of it belong to the Lord. So it was all God's anyways, right? They hadn't worked for it. This was just kind of, this is what God is giving you, but you're not allowed to have it because this is all dedicated to the Lord. Interesting, who is God upset with in verse 1? Okay, not just, I'm really frustrated with that Achan guy, and maybe his family who went along with it. We'll discuss that briefly. I don't have much more to say about that, but he's frustrated with Israel, right? It says two times there in that verse. And so, on account of Achan, he's upset with the whole nation. Anyone know what Achan means? Anyone look that up? Look at, this is very similar. Look at the very last verse of chapter 7, 26, called the Valley of Achor. So, anyone have a note on that? Okay, disaster, trouble, which goes right back to what we just read, right? Chapter 6, verse 18, don't covet unless you're going to bring trouble on the camp. So that's Achan, the troubler. Interesting to me, 1 Chronicles, chapter 2, verse 7, kind of identifies Achan as the troubler of Israel. Does that remind you of anyone, not necessarily kind of having a bad phrase after his name that he's kind of known for?
I can't think of Ahab and Elijah.
Okay, yeah, good. So Ahab, is that you, O troubler of Israel? And Elijah says, no, you're really the troubler of Israel because of your sin. Made me think of Judas, right? The apostle, the one who betrayed him. And that's kind of always tagged along his name. Well, this is kind of Achan, the troubler of Israel. So what we're going to kind of see about him, and I think a lot to learn from him. Verses 2 through 5, What does Joshua do there in verse 2 that he did before? Sends the spies, right? It sends the spies, and I don't know exactly how to pronounce I think is how you pronounce this. AI is how I always said it. You can say whatever you want to. But AI sends it to this just massive city, right? So it's a pretty small city, especially compared to Jericho. So what do the spies come back and report to Joshua? What's their report?
Send the B team.
Good. I guess I need this for, I think I'm too loud. Okay. Anyways. Send the B team. And how many of the B team? Not the full squad even, right? Just send 3,000. And notice chapter 8, verse 25, it lists how many are killed. I don't know if they were evenly split, men and women, 6,000 each, but 12,000 men and women died. So you would think that they're still outnumbered. But, you know, just 30,000 should be able to do this. And so after Joshua hears that, what does he do? Sounds good to me. What do you think of that? What do you think of their logic here? Good, bad, indifferent?
Well, they work to depend on themselves anyway. They're depending on God.
It really seems to me that they are kind of taking responsibility for this for themselves. They're relying on their own selves. Oh, of only 3,000, we can take them. No need to send the entire army. What would make them feel this way? Sorry about my breathing. It's hard not to breathe. I would only last for so long if I didn't breathe.
They're coming off of a victory.
Yes. So they're coming off a huge victory in Jericho. What other big victories are in their recent history? Sihon and Og, right? They just destroyed the eastern part of the Jordan, on the other side of the Jordan. Huge victories. There are giants in the land, fortified cities. So it's been quite a while since they've lost. And here's a small city that, oh, we can handle that one ourselves. Do we ever do that? Give me an example. How do we do that today?
Maybe we overcome this monumental temptation or something with God's help, and we lean on Him heavily through it, and then, you know, the next day something quote unquote small comes up, more like, okay, I got this, and then it ruins our day and we fall.
Right.
Well, anytime we launch out back going to God in prayer.
Yes. Yes. Have you ever had something just really big in your life that you know this is something I can't handle? I'm overcome. It's overwhelming. I'm going to keep going to God in prayer. And God helps you through that big obstacle. And then there comes a little one. Oh, I can take care of this one myself. What does God tell us to do? Bring everything to Him in prayer because He cares for you, right? So let's not have that mentality that seems to be with them. And Joshua goes right along with it. What should they have done? What should have been Joshua's reply or their report to Joshua? How do you think they should have handled this?
I have a question about whose idea was it to send the spies to begin with. I started wondering that about Jericho as well.
Right.
We see God initiating the spies going into the land of Canaan back when Joshua and Caleb are sent, but it doesn't indicate. It looks like Joshua is the initiator of that. And my first question is, after Jericho, after coming into contact with this warrior of the Lord's army, why do we need to go spy out the land to begin with? Why do we need to go check that out? If we know the Lord is going to fight for us, then what's the reconnaissance mission for?
Right.
What are we trying to come back with?
I think it's a valid point, and I don't have a great answer for that. I think they should have been. Well, whatever the Lord desires, that's what we need to do. No, nothing. They're not going to bring out a report and, oh, okay, well, God, this is going to be really hard because they have these things in their city, whatever. We got the Lord. You're good to go. Yes.
I don't want to read too much into their motivations, though, because, I mean, they could have come by this somewhat honestly. Like, I just watched God crumble those walls right before my eyes when I shouted. I don't think you can. It doesn't take too much to read into the story, I think, the way you're saying, but I guess it's possible that, you know, they could have come at this from an honest perspective of, I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought.
That maybe God doesn't need all of our people?
Yeah.
And they're still outnumbered, right? 3,000 would still not match their army if it's 50-50. I know that's a men and women. So maybe there is some faith there. Yes, sir.
God didn't speak to them about this city. He didn't say anything about Ai. He told them about Jericho. He said, don't be afraid. I've had this in your hand. He didn't say that about Ai. He had a good reason why he didn't say it.
Yeah.
Because they had seen it. So there's a big difference right there. They made an assumption they had no right to make.
Yeah, good point. Good point. All right, so seemed like at the very least they should have asked God, are we good to take this city? Do we have your support? Seems like they're trying to take care of this one on their own. Verse 4 and 5, Ai wins the first battle. 3,000 go, and they all flee. And it reads to me, as they are fleeing kind of down that mountain, then 36 of them, around 36 of them, die. And you may think, well, that's not a really big number, right? Only 36. But if you think about 36 men, if they were all married, if some of them were married, now they don't have a father. They don't have a husband anymore. So this is pretty devastating, especially to those families that were affected. And what happens to Israel because of this? So it says their hearts melted and became like water. Does that remind you of anything in Joshua? I'm so sorry. That is Mike. Chapter 2, verse 11. Same thing that happened to the hearts of those in Canaan. Chapter 5, verse 1. The kings of the Amorites, their hearts melted. For now kind of the tables are turned. Now it's Israel whose hearts are just devastated because of this. And then you have verses 6 through 9, where we have Joshua's prayer to God, which is kind of an interesting prayer. But any thoughts through verse 5?
Yes, ma'am.
I really do struggle with this a little bit because you've got righteous men suffering too.
Right.
What Achan did. And he's punishing a whole nation for what one man and maybe possibly some of his family did. You know, when a nation gets really wicked, for instance, the Canaanites, God destroyed them out because the whole nation was wicked.
Right.
And I'm sure there were some innocent people, but the whole nation was wicked. So, but this is just the other way around. One is wicked. And I do struggle with that.
Sure.
I think he's making an example because this is the first time they stepped out and he wanted to make sure that they understood that they need to follow his instructions.
Sure. Yes.
And if these were 36 faithful men, then really them dying is kind of a good thing for them, you could think. They get to go on be with the Lord. It is kind of trying to, well, how is this right? How is this just that they would suffer because of one man's sin, which we also see today, innocent suffering because of another's sin. Callie?
The way that it goes from verse 1 straight into verse 2 makes me think that they're like connected. Like what Achan did is like indicative of the hearts of the entire people. He was just the one that did the thing that everyone else was hearts were positioned to do. And like what Danny said about they didn't go to God first, it's like they're treating God like a good luck charm rather than taking him seriously and trusting him and giving their hearts to him.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree. 1 through 5 is all really hard to find a positive in that whole section. Yes, ma'am.
Verse 10 to me, like the Lord's response to how what they do, tearing their clothes, laying down on
yes.
the ground, praying. God's response is get up.
Yes.
Like, why are you laying down? To me, that indicates there's guilt beyond just Achan's, in that they didn't consult with God. I think what we get from the beginning of this chapter is if they had, I think God would have said, you have some things you need to take care of.
Yes.
And you need to address before we go do this. But they didn't do that. And so it's almost like he's like, what? Now you're gonna
right.
get down and pray? You should have done this before. Get up. This
Good.
Is what's going on. Address the problem.
Good point.
Well, the first thing they do is make an assumption that it's God's problem.
In verse, yes. Yes, verse 7.
Verse, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, a lot of times, that's our reaction.
Right.
Something bad has happened. You know, God, why would you do this to me?
Right.
And that's their whole concern.
Right.
You know, what's going to happen to us now? Our, you know, your name's going to be misperse because you're going to bring us over here and turn your back on us. That's exactly what they said.
Right.
After they, you know, had any problem in the wilderness.
Right.
Same thing.
Yes. Yes.
Great. So, yeah, look at that. Look at that section there. It's kind of 6 through 9. It's Joshua and the elders, so kind of the leaders of the entire nation, falling before the Lord, before the ark of the Lord. In verse 7, Joshua starts blaming God. Why did you bring us over here just to destroy us? Kind of sounds a lot like Israel, right? Well, we should have just stayed in Egypt, right? At least we had some decent food in Egypt, not this terrible manna day after day. So it's kind of the same mentality. And also, what do you think of the next question there in verse 7? If only we had been willing to dwell across the Jordan. What do you think of that question? In other words, this could all have been avoided if only we were willing to stay on the other side of the Jordan. What's wrong with that?
God had promised that they could.
Okay. Who gave them the command to cross the Jordan?
Yeah,
God, get over there, right? And I'm parting the Jordan so that you can get over there. And you set up this memorial so that people will know how great I am. And I want you to take over this land that I've been promising you for centuries. Joshua, in verses 8 through 9, essentially explains why he is so frustrated. Oh Lord, what can I say since Israel has turned their back before their enemies? We had to run from the enemies that we were supposed to destroy, for the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. I can see the future, God, and this is exactly what's going to happen. They're going to gain confidence, so much for their melted hearts. Now, we're going to be the ones that are running, and there's no way we can win. So then, to finish it off, and what will you do for your great name? Just kind of, that was always a good line that Moses would use, right? I think he stole that one from Moses. When God wanted to wipe them out, and Moses would say, well, what about your name? What will people say about you? And so he kind of uses that. What do you think of Joshua's reply here?
Sounds very much like when they came out of Egypt.
Yes.
Why did you just leave us in Egypt instead of bringing us out here to die?
I don't mean to sound callous or anything, but like 36 men being lost is obviously, these are innocent men, that's
right.
Terrible, but it feels a little bit like an overreaction in some ways. It shows you how spoiled the Israelite army is in that, like, usually when two armies meet, even the winner has lost a lot of men.
Yes.
But the fact that 36 men die, and there's just like, what do we do? It shows
right.
you how much God is on their side, that like, nobody dies on our side, everyone dies on their side. That's
yes.
Very lopsided victory.
Sure.
Yeah, good point. You see, Joshua is assuming what about God in these verses?
He's involved.
Joshua's assuming, God, you are to blame for this, right? To Joshua's knowledge, right, nothing sinful had been done, and everyone is super positive. We're obeying the Lord, just as you said. That's what we did. Instead, Joshua should have asked what? What should have Joshua been praying for in this prayer?
He should have asked the Lord, why did we lose? Help me figure out why we lost and
right.
help us improve.
He should have assumed God is not at fault. God is holy. God is righteous. Even though I don't know why and I don't understand, that doesn't give me an excuse to blame God. Right? That makes sense?
Came off sounding whiny.
Very whiny. like the Israelites had influenced him, right? And the complaining, and that's exactly right. I don't know if this would be too much of a positive spin on this. I do appreciate how honest Joshua is, and he just kind of just lays out his whole heart to the Lord. And says, this is how I'm feeling. I think he said some things that were not good, that were not right for him to say, and made a lot of bad assumptions. Seems that Joshua's focused on himself a lot in his response to God. So verses 10 to 15 is God's reply. And he starts in verse 10, rise up. And essentially, that is going to be how he reminds Joshua, you need to get up. Stop this whining, and let's get to work. So rise up. And then in verse 11, what does God tell Joshua that is very informative?
Things have been stolen.
Yes. The fault is not with me, Joshua. The fault is with you. The fault is with Israel because of sin. Achan, it seems, not many people knew, if any, about what Achan did in chapter 6. Even we didn't know, right, in chapter 6, what Achan did. So it seemed as though he got away with it. And he buried it. It's in his tent. No one found out. The only problem with that is God, right? God can see. Even though no one else knew about it, we can't get away with our sin before God, who sees the evil and the good. So God informs Joshua how they have transgressed his covenant. They have taken things under the ban. They have both stolen, they have deceived, and they have also put them among their own things. So it's a number of sins, right, in this. They have taken, stolen, deceived, kind of hid it among their own things. So this is what's going on that you didn't know about. But I think a very good lesson for Joshua: don't assume you know everything. And I think that can be a good lesson for us. Don't assume we have it all figured out and we know how God should operate and we know what God should do. Just trust God, right? And if things don't work or happen the way we think they should, trust in the Lord. Mr. McGee?
I think this is a great lesson to remember, that whatever you do, God knows your heart.
Yes.
Whether your heart's in it or whether it's not, or whatever your motives are, you cannot hide those from God. He's way ahead of you on everything.
Right. Yeah, excellent. Proverbs 15, if God knows the people in Sheol, he knows your heart. So that's a very powerful proverb to think about. We can't get away with anything. Just ask Jonah, right, who tried to hide from God. Verse 12, Israel, you cannot win. You're not going to win until you take care of this problem. There's sin in the camp. You got to get rid of the sin before you can go forward. So verse 13, God tells Joshua, this is what I want you to tell the people. Get rid of the sin in the camp. Joshua, you need to rise up. So there it is again. Verse 10, and then verse 13, rise up, stop lamenting, stop blaming me, and get to work. Consecrate yourselves, because Israel has sinned. You are not going to win unless you deal with the situation. How many times is it a temptation for us to try and just hide our sin? If no one knows about it, I can kind of sweep it under the rug. I can go on and it's not going to affect anybody. No, it is, right? Learn the lesson here from Achan. If you don't deal with sin, then you're not going to be in a good relationship with God. You can't hide it. So that's a very humbling fact. Verse 14, what do you think of this? You shall figure out who has sinned by taking lots. And this kind of helps the idea of casting lots. Again, you kind of think of Jonah, binding him out. That's what happened with him. Proverbs 16, verse 33 helps us with this idea of casting lots. Some people say kind of like drawing straws. That idea, we don't know exactly how that was done. But Proverbs 16:33 says, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. And then we see this process unfold. So maybe we should wait and talk about that as we get there. Yes, sir.
Versus something similar, so that way no man's hand's involved in it, and where it lands is what God decided.
Good. Which is similar to the apostles, right? With Matthias being selected, this we're just going to cast lots, leave our hands out of it, and let God choose. Is that a good point? That's exactly what's going on here. Let's see. God tells Israel what they need to do with the man who has sinned, there in verse 15. Everything that belongs to him shall be burned with fire, he and all that belongs to him, because he has transgressed the covenant of the Lord. He has done a disgraceful thing in Israel. So that's the punishment. That's what Joshua is commanded to do. Get up, get to work, and let's start cleansing the camp. Let's get rid of the sin that is in the camp. So, verse 16, what good thing do you see in Joshua in verse 16?
He rose early.
Okay, who does that remind you of, by the way? Who gets things done quickly?
Abraham.
Yeah, Abraham. Go sacrifice your son, or early the next morning, he's going to get it done. So that's a good thing that Joshua says, okay, we're gonna get with it, and we're going to do what we need to do.
Good attribute of a leader.
Yes, good. Not lazy. Active, proactive, things of that nature. Good. Yeah. Excellent. Think about this process there in verse 17 and 18. How would you describe what is going on? What word would you use to describe what's going on 17 to 18? Your word might be different than mine. That's okay.
It seems like they're all in a row, every new tribe. And then as each one, a clan comes forth. And then a family comes forth from that clan. And so it's like whittling it down.
Yes. Yeah, so it seems like, okay, which tribe is it? And then Judah selected. Okay, well, what family in Judah? Then that family. And then, well, okay, let's narrow it down even more. My word was drama, right? This is really drawn out process of trying to figure out who is the single person in this massive assembly who has transgressed the covenant of the Lord. And who comes out guilty? Achan. What do you think of Achan throughout this whole process? Something stand out to you?
He would have had so much time to just come forward on his own.
Yes, that's what came to me is, well, okay. Maybe he was hoping Reuben would be selected. Nah, good, I'm off the hook. I don't know. But if you get Judah and then his family, and then you keep going down, you would think eventually he'd say, let's stop, I'm the guilty party. Would that have been good if he did that? I think we could have had a little bit more Okay. Wait, that's good, Achan. You did a really bad thing, but at least you came forward and admitted it. But he seems to just let this whole thing happen, just draw it out, and finally it falls on him. Yes, that's a good point. Yes. Hopefully, someone saw so-and-so, and they'll get it, and I can be cleansed of this. And no one will ever know. That's true. That's right. That's a good point. There. I think this was a powerful lesson for all of Israel, and it helped them trust the Lord, casting lots, and if the Lord knew it's this family, and then keep narrowing it down to this man. I think if I'm in that assembly, I'm okay, there's no way I'm going to be able to get away with anything with the Lord, and it puts more faith with me in whenever the lots are cast. It truly is God directing. That would be my answer. Right. Yeah. Yes, good point. Yeah, good. So, do we sometimes confess only when we get caught? I'm going to throw this thing away. I think that's a temptation is, well, unless someone calls me out on it, no one will know, and I can kind of save my name type of logic. No, if you're guilty, make your life right with the Lord. And then verse 19, we'll try to get through this. Joshua tries to get Achan to confess his sins, and he says something funny to me. Do not hide it from me. Do not hide it. Seems like that's what Achan is really, really good at doing, right? Hiding things. So don't hide this. Don't hide this from me. Tell me what you've done. And I guess to Achan's, credit, he does. I don't know if he had a choice. But verse 20 and 21, he starts out by saying, I have sinned against Yahweh, the God of Israel. And do you see it? Do you notice a progression in Achan's sin? Look at verse 21. And what progression do you see there? Yes. Yes, and then concealed it. Right. So does that remind you of anybody who saw, coveted, or wanted, and then took? David and Bathsheba. Who else? Eve. Saw the fruit. Man, this looks good. Gave it to Adam, and then they both ate. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Good. So you see that, and all of those examples are end up bad, right? The lust of the eyes is a strong temptation. So the first John 2. Kind of 15 to 17, the lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life, These are all things that Satan is really good at getting us to fall in the trap for. So that's what he did. And think about, that's exactly what God warned him about. Right? Look back at chapter 6, verse 18 and 19. This is, don't do this, don't covet something so that you will take and then become a troubler for all of Israel. So it's as though a parent saying, look, this is what you have to look out for. Don't do this. And then what does the child do? It's like, ah, you did it, right? So exactly what happens here. So verses 22 to 26, Israel removes the sin in the camp. So the sons of Israel go and get all of the things that Achan stole from God. I think I did skip over. When I saw, verse 21, when I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shinar. And you know, he knew exactly where it was from. And man, this is beautiful. This is what I need for my home or whatever he was thinking about. That's what gravitated him. Yes, sir. Yes, you're right. Long way away.
Reinforces a long-standing analogy in the Bible of Babylon equals sin.
Don't long for the things that come from Babylon. Yeah, good point. Good point. All right, so then everything that Achan has is stoned. Well, I guess him and his family, they are stoned and then they are burned. We learn Achan already had a lot of stuff, right? So notice all the things that they throw down there. The silver, the mantle, the bar of gold, his sons and daughters, his oxen, his donkeys, his sheep, his tent, and all that belonged to him. What does that inform you about Achan? He was not so poor that he had nothing to eat. It still wouldn't have made what he did right. But maybe we could kind of see, I can understand he's really hungry and wants this stuff. Well, a lot of times, the more you have, the more you want, right? So need to be very careful about that. Satan's so good at making us desiring something and making us feel that we need it. We need it now. The sad thing, in chapter 8, what does God allow about the spoil of Ai?
You can have it.
Yeah. This stuff belongs to me, but pretty much every other city, you can have the spoil. So he just was not patient, wanted things now, thought he could get away with it. Very similar to Ananias and Sapphira, which is interesting. Some of the similarities, this is both kind of a beginning of an era. Here's kind of the beginning of conquering the land of Canaan. Ananias and Sapphira, kind of the beginning of the kingdom, the church. And both of them, their sin had to do with greed and money. So that should make sure we're not doing the same thing. Everything Achan loved burned with him in his death. So it didn't do him any good. Achan's action had been had really bad influence on his own family. I can't prove if his wife, if his daughter knew about what he did. I would think they would, but I don't know that. But either way, his sin had bad influences on those around him, just like us. And just because he confessed his sin, this is what I did, I love that mantle and all these things, did that get him out of the punishment? I think sometimes people think, well, if I just confess, then I get out of the punishment. No, you still have to pay for the consequences of your actions. All right, sorry, verse 26. They make a memorial for Israel to remember the bad example of Achan. So this is a very memorable event. It's going to come up all the way in the end of Joshua chapter 22. As Brother Jackson said, we see kind of the bookend. God is angry, and now they dealt with the sin, and so his anger subsides, or he turned away from the fierceness of his anger. And the name of the place was the Valley of Trouble, Valley of Achor. All right, any final thoughts before we wrap up? Yes, sir.
It's interesting that all Israel stoned them. So that means everybody's taking the stone and chucking it out. I mean, that's not easy.
Yes.
It's not easy, but it definitely burns a memory in your brain.
Yes.
You're not going to forget.
And stoning, it was personally, so I used to think that it was like a baseball-sized stone, chuck it, you know.
Yeah.
No, they took like two-handed rocks, stood over the person as they're lying on the ground, just dropped it on them. Mm-hmm. It's a personal thing. It's not, you're not standing at a distance and trying to you know, hit a target. You're dropping a heavy brick on somebody.
Yeah. Very memorable. It's something that is brought up at the end of Joshua. We need to remember what Aiden did so we can learn from it. Same thing for us. All right. Thank you. And chapter 8 next week, and Michael will lead that discussion. So thank you.